The next section is, he trains thus, I shall breathe in, contemplating cessation. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, contemplating cessation. Cessation is a, the word is nirodha, and this is a word which is pointing towards insight and liberation, so that the contemplation, this is really very much the sense of say vipassana practice, insight practice, has to encompass cessation. Before I get into talking about nirodha, I thought to bring up something for reflection concerning the nature of vipassana, in the sense of what is the focus for knowledge and insight, because our tendency is to look towards the exciting, the interesting, the gratifying, and that's quite natural. And we'll tend to do that in our spiritual practice as well. And there's a couple lists of dhammas which are very good for reflection, because there's one that's called the vipassanupakilesa, and which are the 10 imperfections or defilements of insight. What is it that can defile or botch insight, make it take one off on a tangent, turn one away from insight, so that these are things like opasa, which is sort of illumination, a luminous aura, light. Jnana is knowledge. Priti is rapture, joy. Pasati, tranquility. Sukha, bliss or pleasure. Abhimokha, sort of resolution, determination, fervor. Pankaha, a strenuousness or an even exertion. Upatthana, established mindfulness. Upekha, equanimity. Nikanti, delight. And these are sort of things that everybody's looking for. That's what people and tend to, you know, if these things come up in practice, then sort of one feels quite excited or satisfied. Which doesn't mean that one doesn't cultivate these qualities, but to recognize that they may not be the basis and foundation for insight. They may not, they very well could cloud the ability to really free the mind, to liberate the mind, to emancipate the mind. So that to reflect on the what are called, say, vipassana jnana, the insight knowledges. There's 9 insight knowledges. And the knowledge of contemplation on rise and fall, the knowledge of contemplation on dissolution, the knowledge of the appearance is terror. The knowledge of contemplation on disadvantages. The knowledge of contemplation on dispassion. Knowledge of the desire for deliverance. Knowledge of reflective contemplation. Knowledge of equanimity regarding all formations. And the last is sort of conformity and adaptation knowledge. Anulomanyana. You hear that and say, wow, that's not very interesting. I like the first list better. it's important to recognize that what we need to look on things in a very different way. And say, like cessation, this whole section, impermanence, dispassion, cessation, relinquishment. Those are all the factors which are necessary and supportive for the mind to turn away from the world, to step out of the stream of the world, so that there's this necessity to really not be drawn into the vortex, the whirl of the world, and the things which are exciting, interesting, fascinating can very well just keep one spinning with the world. One needs to step back and really look at things in a different way, and to look at them on one. As I talked about the other day, impermanence, dispassion, and then today considering cessation and relinquishment. This recollection of cessation, if one reflects very carefully, one starts to, as the mind gets more settled. It is our natural tendency to go towards the arising of things, the beginnings, the becomings. That's a natural tendency. The nature of desire is always go on to the next thing, and seek for gratification in something else. So, as the mind starts to settle, and then you start to reflect and see things in a whole pattern, you start to recognize, of course, that cessation, the ending of things, is a part of this cycle as well. You don't just get the arising, it's the beginning. You don't have the excitement of something new all the time. You get the fading out, the ending, the dissolution of things. So that the mind starts to pay attention more to the dissolution. And it's very useful to actually take that as an object of contemplation. To recognize the habit pattern of going to beginnings. And you'll notice that just in very simple, like the paying attention to the breath in your meditation. If you watch, you'll probably tend to see the pattern that mindfulness establishes itself more sharply on the beginning of the in-breath. And if you lose it, you tend to lose it towards the end of the breath, or towards the out breath going out, as the feeling starts to fade. So to start to pay attention to those endings, that dissolution, and then as the mind becomes more clear, then actually the mind starts to recognize more and more clearly that things are ending all the time. Things are disappearing, dissolving in front of one's eyes. The insubstantiality of physical and mental phenomena starts to become very apparent, and it brings up a great sense of urgency in practice, because yes, things definitely are falling apart all the time, and you start to watch and see that there's this cessation is taking place all the time. When it's like, as soon as you start to pay attention to something, it starts to cease. As soon as you start to watch something, it starts to cease. And that really lends itself to a quality of dispassion in the mind, a cooling. So in taking cessation as an object, and then starting to take cessation of not just physical phenomena, say like the breath, but also mental phenomena. So paying attention to the cessation of thoughts, cessation of feelings, the cessation of the experience of dukkha. Because this is what, when we're talking about cessation, it's not just about a cold, heartless ending of everything into a void, an unfeeling void, but is a cessation of dukkha, a cessation of that feeling of discontent, dissatisfaction, of things being painful and suffering. So that to start paying attention to the cessation of dukkha, paying attention to the cessation of greed, hatred, and delusion. Normally we get caught up in their movement, their attractiveness, the lure of the defilements. So to start paying attention to their cessation, and you start to be able to relate to them in a totally different way. The fact that they can, because we do have a perception of ourselves, of our mind, that somehow it's absolutely, totally, irrevocably riddled with greed, hatred, and delusion. There'll never be anything else, and there's no hope. It's just nothing but kilesa, and it's all you can do is just sort of bear with it, and hope that you sort of survive. But once you start paying attention to cessation and realize, wow, yeah, just greed, hatred, and delusion are definitely impermanent phenomena that cease. They have a beginning and they have an ending. The ending is very clear. And the way that one puts one's attention on things conditions whether they arise or they cease. So that one sees, one can do something about it. One can turn one's attention and dwell in the cessation of greed, hatred, and delusion. One can turn one's attention, allow one's attention to settle on the cessation of dukkha, the cessation of self, sense of I, the sense of self, which is constantly sort of impinging on the mind and reaching up and grabbing one by the throat and saying, I exist. Don't forget me. So that the turning attention to cessation, realizing that the coolness of cessation, because this is like Nirodha is a synonym for Nibbana. Nirodha is one of the synonyms for the goal of Buddhist practice. So to turn one's attention to the goal, this ending cessation. And there's another way of looking at cessation, which is very important, because normally when we think of cessation, we think of cessation as the ending of an existing thing, and there's another way of looking at cessation as it being, say, the non-arising of things, say the non-arising of dukkha, the non-arising of greed, hatred, and delusion, the non-arising of self, so that one doesn't have to wait for dukkha to manifest in order to contemplate nirodha, cessation. But the contemplation of its non-arising, it's not forming itself together, pulling the causes together for dukkha to coalesce, or for greed, hatred, and delusion to gain momentum. So the turning of the mind to the non-arising of defilement, or the non-arising of suffering. This is a contemplation which is, it gives a whole different twist to practice, because normally we tend to sort of deal with concrete things. We tend to wait for this till there's a problem before we fix it, and it's important to realize that this aspect of Dhamma, or the way out of suffering, is through, say, Nirodha, or through Nibbana, through the Buddha refers to this unmade, this unbecome, this uncreated, the unborn. If there were not this unborn, uncreated, uncompounded, there would be no escape from the born, the created, the compounded, the existing. So that this fundamentally is there, and we don't recognize it, we don't see it, we don't turn our attention to it. So that this is also, say, contemplating cessation. We need to turn our attention to that which is, say, the cessation as in terms of the non-arising of things. And there's and that has different words, say, like when Nibbana, or the deathless, or the unborn, the uncreated. Now there's a very interesting sutta which I won't I'll read it out for fear of mangling it. It's from the Anguttara Nikaya. Once the Venerable Anuruddha went to see the Venerable Sariputta. When they had exchanged courteous greetings, he sat down and said to the Venerable Sariputta, "Friend Sariputta, with the divine eye that is purified, transcending human ken, I can see the thousandfold world system. Firm is my energy, unremitting, My mindfulness is alert and unconfused. The body is tranquil and unperturbed. My mind is concentrated and one-pointed. And yet, my mind is not freed from the cankers, not freed from clinging. Friend Anuruddha, said the Venerable Sariputta, that you think thus of your divine eye, this is conceit in you, mana. That you think thus of your firm energy, your alert mindfulness, your unperturbed body, and your concentrated mind, this is restlessness in you, uttucha. That you think of your mind not being freed from the cankers, this is worrying in you, kukucha. It will be good if the Venerable Anuruddha, abandoning these three states of mind and paying no attention to them, will direct the mind to the deathless element. And, of course, then Venerable Anuruddha went and did that and then was liberated, became freed, one of the arahants. So it's an interesting contemplation, because we tend to go to the say the form of things or the content of things, and we forget to say to look like that. We're trying to get all the different factors of the meditation and the practice and the attainments, and get all that which you talk about, and then look past the deathless, look past the nirodha, cessation, so that it's important to take that into consciousness, to direct the mind to that in that way. In the same way, it's similar when we're, say, like when we're sitting here, what our attention goes to is it's like the people, the posts, the stairs, the floor, the ceiling, the mosquito screens. That's where our attention goes, and we become absorbed in those things. And we don't pay much attention to the space around things. We don't pay much attention to, the non-existence or the non-arising of things. Our attention goes to that, so that we become trapped in the form of things. We get trapped in the experience of things. So it's important that we turn our attention to something else: cessation of suffering, cessation of self, cessation of greed, hatred, and delusion. Turning to cessation. This is an essential part of our practice, or that how our practice will come to a fruition or maturity. In a similar way, that this last section of this tetrad, contemplating relinquishment. The word for relinquishment is patinissaka, and in a similar way, I'm not sure if patinissaka is used as a synonym for nibbana or not, but wosaka, which is translated exactly the same and is very similar word and has the same meaning. That's used as a synonym for nibbana. So that this sense of relinquishment, giving back, this is also a part of the when we contemplate nibbana, the where we're going to, relinquishment plays a large part. Giving up. Surrendering, giving back. Ajahn Buddhadasa speaks about it very nicely, illustrating relinquishment. he calls it sort of tossing back or something. But he talks about it as you know, really we've been thieves. Basically, as human beings, we have been thieves, and we've been stealing things which don't belong to us. And we have to relinquish it. We have to give it back. And what doesn't belong to us? And of course, what doesn't belong to us are our body, feelings, perception, mental formations, consciousness. These belong to nature. These belong. One can't make them personal attributes. One can't hold on to them as this is me, this is I, this is mine. One can't hold on to the and they take the sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, mental objects, and consider them one's own. One has to relinquish them. If not, then we're thieves, and we experience the results of being thieves. A thief, when he's caught, experiences suffering in one way or another. And we're always being caught. The nature of existence is we can't get away with it. So we have to give it back. We have to relinquish. Otherwise, we just continue to suffer. We reap the suffering of a thief because we're constantly taking what isn't given, what doesn't belong to us. So that the practice is the sense of a culmination of, well, it's just in this culmination of 16 steps of Anapanasati comes to relinquishment, giving back, giving up, surrendering. This is a essential recollection, contemplation. As I was saying the other day, this word contemplation, it's like seeing or beholding, holding up into the mind, the possibility of relinquishment. By bringing it up into the mind, beholding it, contemplating it, turning the mind in that direction, then we can see the way out. So this, with Anapanasati, is breathing in, breathing out, reflecting, considering, contemplating on experience, how can we relinquish, how can we give up? Each in-breath and each out-breath is an opportunity for relinquishing. And it's also, in a more prosaic way, it's also, that's one of the basis for, in Samyutta Nikaya, there's a sutta where the contemplating relinquishment and turning the mind to relinquishment is the path for establishing right samadhi, samma samadhi. So that in our practice, if we're practicing mindfulness of breathing, developing our meditation, whether we're trying to develop the concentration, which is in conjunction with the path, or we're trying to develop insight, this bringing up into the mind of relinquishment is an essential part of our practice. So to reflect and consider, this is, and in particular, this relinquishment is very much a relinquishment of self, a relinquishment of the attachments to I, mine. That relinquishment of self is also, I mean, there's a certain extrapolation which is needed by contemplating impermanence, seeing impermanence, seeing cessation, and then seeing that, you know, what is impermanent, what is suffering, what is those are not worthy of taking as self, then we can let go. So these are just to bring it all together. And that's, in practice, I mean, this is a way of bringing up tremendous energy in practice as well. If you're waiting to get perfect samadhi before you're going to contemplate things in order to develop insight, then you could wait for quite a long time. But to start turning your attention to the goal, turning your attention to the possibility of the fruition of the path, you start realizing that it's much closer. The possibility is much closer than we would normally consider. So this this 16 stages of Anapanasati is a very comprehensive path. This is really a complete path of practice. And as the Buddha says in this discourse, this is using this Anapanasati in the 16 stages will bring about the fulfillment of the four foundations of mindfulness. When we contemplate those four foundations of mindfulness, body, feelings, mind objects, in a very structured and careful, considered way, using wisdom, then that's really the core of how the mind will say sort of like deconstruct the grasping around say permanent happiness and self, and sort of not seeing impermanent suffering and not self. So that these four foundations of mindfulness are say really the core that helps this anicca dukkha anatta to really sink into consciousness, to free the mind. And the developing of these four foundations of mindfulness is also brings to fulfillment the seven factors of enlightenment. And those factors of enlightenment are the way to balance the practice, balance the training, balance the mind in its active and its passive forms, in its sort of its energetic and its concentrated forms, in its reflective and its still forms, so that these factors of enlightenment are to be reflected on as well when you're using Anapanasati. Mindfulness, investigation of Dhamma, effort, joy, tranquility, concentration, equanimity. These are structures for investigation, structures for contemplation, and they're really useful to have these structures because they're, if you just sit and kind of watch the breath go in, go out, breath go in, go out, and then the mind will start to wander and start to get a bit kind of nebulous. It might get rather sort of pleasantly peaceful, but it probably won't get very clear. Won't get very sharp. Won't get very lucid in its sort of ability to see clear, to see clearly, understand, reflect on things, so that these structures are useful for that sense of both stilling and reflection, and that's what we need to say to cultivate in our practice. I think this is my last talk in Anapanasati. I'll offer that for your reflection this evening.